Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the tales that we tell. And it's episode 86.
And it's spooky week.
It's spooky week.
I got in there before you.
Yay! It's Halloween weekend. Woohoo! Oh,
you've gone slightly Christmassy there.
I did, yes. Well, sometimes scary bees go, no, they don't.
No, they don't. I don't think there are any scary bees going, oh, coming down your chimney at midnight on the, in December.
Santa is scary.
Yeah, terrifying.
But no, it is Halloween weekend. We're here in the spooky, spooky world of poisoning and murder and ghosts for 1 week only.
One week only, some ghosts.
How are you, Nick?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Have you been trick-or-treating yet?
Not just yet.
Not yet.
It seems a bit early.
Yes, we have a couple of days until...
There's still a few days before the Halloweeniness. And also, I think with a lack of children accompanying me, I think that might be slightly crazy if I just go banging on people's doors going, give me Twixes!
But that's just a normal Saturday night.
Yeah, I would order chocolate.
Kids get all the fun at Halloween. And like, why can't adults run around the streets and knock on people? I see the problem.
Yeah, I think as you're speaking there, you're realising the problem that could ensue from this.
No sweets, just cash. What would be your Halloween dress-up choice? There's a weird way to say that, but what would you go as if you were to dress up on a trick or treating excursion?
I don't know. I find costumes difficult to do.
Right?
No, I find the range of costumes slightly challenging. But I did do a fantastic one a few years ago.
Oh, what did you do?
Fantastic one. I went as Danny DeVito doing the Penguin from Batman.
Oh yes, I think you've mentioned that.
And that was awesome, and I looked fantastic.
That is very good. And again, let's just go over what the character's name is.
The Penguin.
Did you say Penguin?
Penguin.
It just tickles me every time.
Let's mock someone's speech, shall we?
Like that doesn't happen every week with me. No, I've seen pictures of that. That is pretty damn cool. I once did a very good Halloween party where I went with very dark, macabre versions of Alice in Wonderland characters.
Nice.
So Alice was like in a mental asylum. You had the Red Queen who was just trying to cut everyone's head off. My brother-in-law came as a white rabbit, but like he was a gangster with a Tommy gun. It was marvellous.
I could do a good Tweedledum or Tweedledee.
Just one of them.
Appearing. Well, there's not two of me.
Bring a mirror.
Bring a mirror.
That's very nice. Yes. Any poisonings this week?
I forgot about this question was coming, and I did not think of an answer. So I'm going to say no. I'm probably waiting for all the trick-or-treating on the Halloween itself.
I really must reiterate, don't poison kids.
No, I'm not going to do this.
Oh, okay.
But potentially there might be some out there.
Oh, there might be.
Poisoned
apple for the children.
Exactly. Well, there's a witch out there somewhere, yeah, throwing apples around full of poison.
She could be trick-or-treating.
Standing in an auction just lobbing apples at people as they pass.
Everyone going, this isn't scary, it's just upsetting.
Yeah. They get whacked in the head by flying apples.
She just knocks on your door and just throws an apple at you and then goes, give me all your Twixes.
It's a modern witch for a modern Britain.
Love it. I am here
on
for
a scooter,
that.
Just chucking apples.
She's now sort of Italian, isn't
yeah,
she?
No.
Ciao.
No, not a proper scooter, but like one of those like pushy along.
Oh, well, just on like a foot scooter.
Yeah, like...
She's got to get around.
Yeah, exactly. Basket of apples on the front. Might move up to a bicycle one day, but not
well,
just
that
yet.
Sounds quite quaint, actually. If she's got a basket full of apples on the front of her old-timey bicycle. She sounds adorable now, suddenly. Apart from the fact that she's killing kids.
Oh, not kids. It could be anyone.
Anyone. Oh, marvellous. Yeah, well, we speaking of cycling around the town and hurling apples at people while dressed as a witch, I think it's time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Well, indeed, because we know they've all done that before. Thank you so much to Hayley Storm. Very dramatic.
Thank you to Emporium 32.
And to this next person, who potentially has to come and live with me, the cake butler.
I didn't see that name.
Where have you been all my life?
To the hundreds of Patreon subscribers that we have now, you know we love each and every one of you. But anyone new, just get creative with the names. That's amazing. The cake button. What the hell is the story
that? Or I've misread it entirely.
Oh, you mean it's Cat Butler or
something? Yeah, probably. I'm now going to check. No, the cake butler. It's definitely the cake butler.
It's definitely the cake butler. Yay! That's a superhero name.
That's great. I love it.
It's great. Okay, the cake butler and our other beautiful, delicious new Patreon subscribers. You are incredibly sexy. We love you very, very much. And yeah, come and join us on Patreon if you haven't already. We've been having a lovely time. We talked about cults this week.
We did. That was jolly.
We got all culty. Right. It was chilling. It was very cool. Yeah, a little bit of cult action on there. Great place to chat about dark, terrible things. Well, Nick.
Hello.
Are you ready?
Don't do that. It's weird and unpleasant.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison?
I'm ready to throw this glass at your face. That's really unnerving.
Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails like I did 300 years ago.
Were you aiming for old woman there?
I don't know. Yeah, to
at
say
the end,
30.
It went a bit weird.
I was thinking, like, 300, bloody hell, how old is this ghost?
See, it was realistic until that point. Then you just blew it. But, yeah, I'll have a drink. Whatever, whichever one that was, I'll have a drink.
First one of the terrifying ghost child from 300 years ago. No one was alive then. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Well, it is a sort of a combination of stories this week. Mainly my episode, but also Nick's going to chip in. Since it is Halloween, but we can't possibly have any stories without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell and will flavour our cocktail of the week. I got to choose a secret ingredient this week, and this week's secret ingredient is a cat.
A cat.
A cat. A lovely, lovely cat.
See, now you with your anti-animal cruelty malarkey going on here, I feel would be, has now encouraged me to blend a cat or muddle one in some vodka or something. Seemed very unlike you.
I just wanted to put a cat on the table see what would happen.
Okay, well now this is entirely on your head.
So. On my head be it, okay.
On your head be it.
If there have been cats that have been killed, I'm worried that you went to that immediately. That's why that witch is throwing apples at you. Like, you bastard.
Stole her familiar.
I bloody love a cat. Only second to sharks.
Right.
I'm just going through the gambit of animals now.
Right,
that I
okay,
love,
now
we're
going to name animals now.
But with a cat, what have you come up with, Nick?
Well, I was looking on the Instagram and there has been quite the reaction to the cat and many, many, many options there. So we are having a black cat, but none of the variants that have been so far yet mentioned.
Ooh.
So this is an entirely different one.
See, I've never heard of a black cat cocktail. I can imagine there being one in
existence. Well, apparently there are many. Apparently there are many, many, many variants. So this is one that we are going to try to do.
Wonderful. I think it is high time for us to go into the poisonous cabinet kitchen and shake up a spooky storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Oh, Nick, a black cat.
Yes.
A black cat has crossed our path.
It's not very black.
It's not very black. No, it's brown.
It's a brown cat.
It's brown cat. Brown drinks serve us well.
This is true. This is true. We do have luck with brown drinks. It's quite dark, though. I'll give you that. It is relatively dark.
It is. Now, I'm excited to try this because, again, I have no knowledge of what a black cat cocktail is or what any of the variants are, so I literally do not know what's going to happen to my mouth in a minute.
No, neither do I.
Are you feeling confident about this?
I'm...
Oh, God.
I think it's going to be potent.
Okay. Good. I need a drink this evening.
Yeah, no, this is certainly a drink with a big capital D.
That needs to be the name of your cocktail book. Drinks with a capital D. Big D energy.
Big D energy.
Okay, yeah. So let's dive in.
Merry Halloween.
Merry Halloween. Oh, no. Something did happen to my mouth.
Oh, I'm pleasantly surprised.
Oh, God, you bloody would like that, wouldn't you?
I said capital D.
I definitely can guess at one. You've definitely got the Lafroy in there, haven't you? Or the... Is it...
No.
Is it not?
No.
Oh, God. I swear, it tasted really smoky and peaty.
Nope.
Okay. Oh, I'm going to take a minute to get over that. You're very happy.
I'm really enjoying that.
Bloody hell.
That's really good.
Glad it,
that's actually a lot better than I thought it was.
Second sip.
It's a very me drink. It's not a very you drink.
Oh, there's a lot going on there now. Oh, I'm not sure about that.
Good, that means more for me.
I just wanted a nice drink for Halloween. I'm crying. Sorry.
You actually are. It's made your eyes water.
Can you talk us through what this is so I can regain my composure?
I mean, I'm slightly surprised by the reaction here. Gin. We have some gin.
Okay.
We like gin.
We liked gin.
We have some mezcal, which is where you're getting your smokiness from.
Oh, yes. Okay.
We have some mezcal. Mm. We have some sherry.
Sherry?
Bit of dry sherry, Montillard sherry.
Okay.
And some sweet vermouth.
What? That's it?
A drop of sugar. A drop of sugar to balance. But yeah, that's it. So, I mean, no citrusy lime. No. Nothing to water it down. It's pure booze.
Stirred or?
Stirred over a big old chunk of ice.
Gin, mezcal, sherry and red vermouth.
That makes me happy.
Nick is so
I
happy.
Really like that.
That's like the first time someone tasted a Negroni. And the first time I ever tasted a Negroni, I went, wah! And threw it across the room. Yeah, I don't like
it. It's got mezcal. It's got gin. You like those things.
But you ruined it with sherry.
No, I made it so much better.
Wow, that is really divisive. I don't think I've ever seen you this happy. This is right up there. This is great.
I love it.
Giggling mess. I'm going to try a third sip.
I'll make you something different. Nope.
No. It did mellow on the... Actually, to be fair, I think I took the smallest sip in the world there. The third sip does mellow a little. And then you get more of the sweetness of the sherry. But, here it comes. No. Oh, you've taken mezcal and done something horrible to it.
I don't think there has been a cocktail that has divided us so distinctly.
It's so your cup of tea. No, I'm going to cry if I drink this.
I've made a drink that's made you make cry. What more do you want for Halloween?
I don't think it's wise that I continue with this. Nick, I am donating my black cat to you.
Oh, how kind.
Which is kind of apt for the story. You'll hear about this later.
Okay.
But
does this mean I've now got to go make you something else?
It does, actually, yeah. Because I'm a benevolent woman, but not that
goddamn. Not that benevolent.
No. Taketh away as well. So, yeah, the black cat, a resounding success with Nick, but I'm afraid we are going to have to do the wavy lines and pause while Nick makes me something nice. Oh, should we do spooky lines?
Spooky lines.
Like the Twilight Zone, like... Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. That's a psycho noise.
Yeah, it's great, yeah.
And we're back again.
Hello.
I have made myself an alternative drink. I have made a margarita with mezcal to try and stay on the same plane. But Nick's very happy. He's
I've
jolly.
Got two drinks now. I'm
he
fine.
Has two drinks. All Everything well. Has worked out beautifully. So you have a black cat firmly in
I
hand.
Have two black cats firmly in hand.
Two black cats. Well, that's a very strange image of you walking down the street, la 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 la, with the cats. I'm at a safe distance behind you.
With a margarita.
With a margarita and a sombrero going, this is a strange Halloween costume. Is it time for some Halloween tales?
I think we should get on with it.
Hooray, hooray, hooray. Let us delve into the world of witches for Halloween. Witches, Nick.
Witches.
There are witches. We're going to talk about witches this time.
Okay. There better be some good poisony, murdery connections going on.
Well, there are murdery connections
okay,
with witches.
Okay, then I'll let you off then.
Thank you so much. Witches, witchy trials, witchy shenanigans today. I have got a story. Nick has a bit of a story. I've got some little factoids to tell you, as is my wont at Halloween. It's all a great big bubbling cauldron of poisony goodness. Obviously, we are looking at some witch trial stories today and stories around the witch trials. Before we go into the laughter, I completely acknowledge that the witch trials themselves are an example of murder. And it's a very dark and serious side to everything that's witchy. I have some thoughts to share on this at the end. We will cover it, but let's get on with the banter first, shall we? We've shared a few witchy tales on this show before, haven't we?
We have. I mean, a Mary Bateman springs to mind.
Absolutely.
The Prophet Hen of Leeds.
The Prophet
will
Hen of
never
Leeds.
Leave my mind. I want a t-shirt with that written on it.
That's the next batch of merch, isn't it? We've had witches on the show. We've never had a witch-themed show. There's
this
been wizards and... Have we had a warlock?
Not by name, I think.
Not by name, but by nature.
Well, indeed.
I don't know the difference between a warlock and a wizard.
I don't think there is much of one.
Okay, well then why do you come at me every time I say, is he a warlock? You go, no, he's a wizard.
It's fun.
Okay.
And I like saying wizard.
Wizard. Wizard. We almost had a wizard shark.
This is true.
We've had drawings of a wizard shark sent to us.
Love
this
it.
Is amazing. Yes, we have had a healthy dose of people proclaiming themselves to be witches or seers or indeed prophet hens. But let's start with something poisony.
Good.
Nick?
Yes?
How do witches fly?
On a broom.
On a broom.
In their minds.
In their minds. On a broom, yes. This popular image we have of the witch on her broom flying around. Now, where or where does that come from? It's interesting. Well, traditionally, it wasn't thought, you might think it's strange, but way back when witches were popular, dare I say, or when people just believed that there were witches out there, no one thought that witches just conjured the ability to fly out of their minds or out of their magic. They were reported to use a flying ointment.
Mm-hmm.
Flying ointment, that is the word for it. Not a salve, not a butter.
Nope.
No, an ointment. It is an ointment.
Not a liniment or a lubrication, but an ointment.
No, it was a concoction, shall we say, that the witches would reportedly smear on a chair, actually. Most people thought they would put it on their chair or their stool and then fly off while seated, because you should be comfortable.
Well, absolutely. You've got to be comfy in long distance of flying. Mm. You know, if like you're travelling economy or something like that, it's all a bit cramped and horrible. You
absolutely.
Want a bit of comfort.
But there's always this association that witches just can't rise into the air, like we've seen in The Witch or you know, the popular films. It's the idea that they have to have an inanimate object that they make fly and then they sit on it and then they can fly as well. It's very technical. I quite like
it. Well, I think there are a lot of cases as well where the witch is actually supposed to transform into a flying thing.
Yes.
So, which is probably has a slightly different genre of flying witches.
Genre of flying witches. They have bands of them.
Exactly.
Flying Witches Squadron. It's quite nice. But they would put these ointments on their chairs or their brooms, if you would believe it. And now Francis Bacon himself,
mm-hmm.
not the modern one, the old one.
The old one, yes.
The old one, obviously. He described the ingredients as the fat of children digged out of their graves.
Nice.
And the juices of smallage, wolfsbane, and zinc foil mingled with the meal of fine wheat.
Classic.
Well, that may be true, but it is far more likely that the witches or covens, or maybe those who just watched them, were under the influence of something pretty toxic. But pretty trippy as well.
But pretty trippy.
Pretty trippy, yes. Plants like our dear old friend Belladonna, Hemlock, Mandrake, and the lovely, lovely Opium.
What's not to like?
So there's theories that the flying ointments that the witches used were no more than drugs, and they weren't flying at all.
No, just lots of hallucinations.
Exactly. They were flying in their minds. The idea of flight is just another way of saying you were totally high, but poisoned up to your tits, really. You're looking at your book.
Like, I am. No, I've got an interesting passage. One of my witchy books, actually relating to this very, very thing. There's a passage that was written by by an alchemist in,
okay.
in 1562. A chap called Giovanni Battista Porta.
Nice.
Who is commenting on these sort of supposed hallucinogenic ointments the witches are using to get to their various sabbats and other important appointments.
Because they do have a full calendar.
Well, exactly. They're busy, busy people. And I'm going to read this little extract here because I think it's quite amusing. He's actually telling about how two men he has encountered have believed that they are entirely convinced that they have transformed into to animals and flown to another place.
Flying animals, meeting. I'm assuming.
Well, you'll wait and see.
Okay.
You'll wait and see. So he says, the man would seem sometimes to be changed into a fish and fling out his arms, would swim on the ground. Sometimes he would just skip up and then dive down again. Another would believe himself turned into a goose. And would eat grass and beat the ground with his teeth like a goose, and now and then sing and endeavour to clap his wings. So he has witnessed these people who are afterwards are entirely convinced that they have either swum or flown vast distances.
After applying the
their ointments, and are convinced that they have gone miles and miles and miles to their various meetings, returned again, where in fact all the while they're actually just like flapping around on the ground. And this is like 1562, so...
That does really knacker the images of witches of the olden times being mistresses of the forest, huddling around their cauldrons and conjuring up spirits. It's just them lying on the ground going, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But who knows where they went in their mind.
In their mind, looked amazing.
They were there, they were dealing with the things they need to deal with, just in the mortal plane. They were perhaps less...
Elegant.
Active. Elegant, that is the word elegant. I was looking for.
Very much feels like us when we've had too many drinks and
this
we start
is also
dancing.
True. This is also true.
Yes, when we do the pointy dancing, we look amazing. Everyone's like, wow, they are having a fit.
My God, they're old.
There's other interpretations of the flying ointment that are a little bit lewd, shall we say. Now, you may remember when we talked about the case of Alice Kittler,
yes,
who was a witch that we did cover in the show, and the idea that the ointment is best absorbed through sensitive areas.
A mucousy membrane.
Yes, the mucousy membrane, maybe the vagina.
Maybe.
Yes, there are lots of references as well when in the Alice Kittler story there's all the reference of many worms and entrails and stuff that had to be rubbed into the vajayjay that would enable the woman to fly. But when you look into some of the writings, a lot of references to greased staffs.
Right. Okay.
This is true. It may have been misconstrued that where did the bloody broomstick come from?
Well, this is a very good point.
Yeah.
Is this just someone having a great, jolly old time? Someone walks in and goes, what the fuck are you doing? I'm a witch, I can fly!
Oh, it's Halloween, Nick. The kids
Sorry.
Are listening. No. Somehow I think the flying ointment... Oh, they were on broomsticks. Oh, wait a minute. They were greasing up
they were on
pole.
Top of a broomstick.
I'm sorry, people. Not safe for work. We probably should have said that beforehand.
They will know that by our episode.
If they were listening to everything else merrily, they went, oh, this is the point where I turn off. Then power to you. But yes, grease staffs. There's loads of references of grease staffs, and I think that's where the broomstick reference comes from. And now we've got all these witches on broomsticks and all these kids are like, yay, broomsticks. Like, oh, kids, no. Just have that in your mind.
Tonight, when you're alone.
I was going to say when you're trick-or-treating with your family. Oh, God.
Anyway. You gave me the second drink. You only have yourself to blame.
Indeed. Well, the old warnings that drugs or whatever else makes you fly. It's just witchcraft. Yep. Just witchcraft. All those PSAs about, oh, don't take drugs because you think you can fly off a building, you can do that. It's true. It's true because the witches were doing it for ages.
And having a great time.
Having a great time. You know, very clearly they were. Misunderstood.
Them.
This is more reason the witches should be revered because they were just ahead of female empowerment. That was
quite
it.
Right.
But yeah, that was a little foray into the filthy world, apparently, of flying ointments. Now, I do have a story for you today.
I should hope so.
I'm going to tell you the story of the first woman ever executed for witchcraft in England.
Ooh.
I will again say, first woman ever to be executed for witchcraft in England. She bloody wasn't a witch.
And I doubt she was the first, to be honest.
Well, officially... In a trial as recorded...
In the books.
Yes. There are many, many cases beforehand of people going, you're vaguely a witch. Burn her, hang her, stone her to death. But in a trial setting, and this story is mad. Yes, it is the precursor to a lot of horror that would come later. But let's go with it. Let's have a little bit of fun because it's Halloween. Let's go and meet Nick. Agnes Waterhouse.
Hello, Agnes.
A witchy name, if ever there was one. Now, Agnes was born around 1503. We're going to meet her when she's in her late 50s. She's also known as Mother Waterhouse. And she lives in the Essex village of Hatfield, Peveril.
I mean, Essex, that sort of area, I mean, it is rife with witchiness.
Is it genuine?
No, it really is. It is that sort of area of England is the absolute centre of witchcraft, witchiness for hundreds of years.
Well, also was the birthplace of poison panic as well.
Absolutely,
so it's perfect. But why Essex, the birthplace of witchiness?
There's one thing I read that it was because it's all that sort of Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk, that sort of area.
Very and mystical area.
Exactly. It's got a very mystical vibe. Very, very open and very can be very bleak. Person said it sends people mad. Just the sheer openness and the exposed nature of it all.
It's on the coast, for people who don't know the area of England. It's on the coast. It is the site of many ghost stories.
It's where Black Shuck comes from.
The Black Shuck, which is one of my favourite sort of old fables. I mean, it's not Yorkshire, mate. I mean,
but back in the day, back in the day. But yeah. this is what people say. But it's host to a huge amount of spiritual activity. You've got Rendlesham Forest there as well, which I think Emma from Real Life Ghost Stories has covered. It's pretty much the English Roswell,
nice
in sort of UFO sightings and stuff like that, and a history of sort of witchy, mystical behaviours and things like that. So yeah, it very much is the sort of one of the centres of English folklore and witchy shit.
Excellent. Well, I mean, Agnes was born there.
Good for
her. This is where we're going this week. So Agnes, as I said, she lives in Essex. She's a widow with a daughter called Joan. Joan is about 18 when we meet her. And we're meeting her in the year of 1566. And there is much to do in the town of Chelmsford, for it is the time of the Midsummer Assizes, Nick. The Assizes. Do you know what an assize is?
It's a court.
Yes, it is. It is a court, equivalent of a crown or high court. They are intermittently held in these big country towns back in the day when the judges from the big smoke would leave London and come to the countryside to preside over local cases. Mm-hmm. Bit of a holiday for the judges during the hot, hot summer. A holiday may be stretching it.
And they're probably quite busy during these times.
Oh, you wouldn't believe.
I think all the crimes have been sort of held until the judge arrives on his like yearly trip.
Absolutely.
So the prisons are overflowing with nutters.
Queuing round the block. Everyone wants to see the big men from the big city. Yeah. The courthouse is not a pleasant venue. It was described by one local historian, open-sided building with galleries overlooking the court floor. The court was only 26 foot by 24 foot. If you can picture that. And had to fit the counsel, the clerks, the plaintiffs, the defendants, the jurors, the witnesses, the prisoners, the judges, and all of the spectators, and everyone who was queuing up for the next case.
Pretty much everyone in Essex.
Everyone crammed in there going, "Oh, look at the big men.
Oh, what pointy hats they have.
Do you have anything to say in your defence? I can't breathe."
I like your hat.
And also, all of these highfalutin judges are coming down from the big city, and they're not getting much of an exciting holiday in the hot, cramped courtroom, and they're having to deal with a lot of petty country folk problems. Mm. Simple, rural folk, not big, sexy cases. Yeah, he stole my sheep, she took my fence, she ate my bread, I've got no legs, can I sue God? All of those things.
All of those things
come through. But this year is a little bit more exciting, as one case has attracted the presence of Reverend Thomas Cole, who is an archdeacon, who will go on to be an archdeacon, Sir John Fortescue, who will become the Chancellor of the Exchequer, and also the Queen's attorney later will get involved in this case. There's enough big names here that you wouldn't normally see in Chelmsford Assizes, really, for Midsummer. People are thinking, this is quite interesting. What sort of case could attract such prestigious men? Well, it would be the case of these three women, Agnes Waterhouse, her daughter, 18-year-old Joan, and Elizabeth Frances, allegedly Agnes's sister. Some records on this are sketchy. She is recorded as her sister at a later time. And these women are all accused. What could they be accused of? Greasing up the shafts. No, sorry. It came out much worse than I had it in my head. No, they are accused of witchcraft. And Agnes herself is accused of using witchcraft to murder.
See, that's a tricky thing, that. You don't want to be doing that.
You don't want to be killing anyone, generally, but using your witchy ways.
Yeah.
She's accused of killing a man named William Fine. She's also accused of killing her own husband. I will say, William Fine, the references here, disappears in most of the reports. He's accused of killing a man. This is a witch trial. Details are sketchy in certain parts, and they are absolutely minutiae in other areas where you'd go, really, this isn't the point of this story.
This is what you're concentrating on.
Not surprisingly, not much is known about her childhood. But all the information from this case comes from the court records, and namely a pamphlet entitled... The Examination and Confession of Certain Witches in Chelmsford in County Essex before the Queen's Magistrates Judges in the day July of 1566.
Is that one again?
No. I forgot there were Roman numerals in there and I just blanked. It's on the 26th of July. Sorry. Now, these three women have indeed been accused of witchcraft. And it was said that the two sisters, Elizabeth and Agnes, practice witchcraft together and had brought Agnes's daughter, Joan, into their coven. Now, some say that she was part of their little coven of witches. Others say she was an innocent bystander. Now, Elizabeth Francis is the first one on the stand. Now, she speaks to court. And as I said, these are just the testimonies from the pamphlet. And they're great.
I'm thinking not entirely unbiased.
Maybe, maybe not. Let's just go with it and we'll speculate later.
Okay, we'll find out.
Now, it was said from the age of 12, Elizabeth Francis had been schooled by her grandmother, Mother Eve, in the ways of witchcraft. She had taught her the old ways, the witchy ways. And when Elizabeth Francis was a grown woman, Mother Eve had given her a special gift, a familiar, in the shape of a cat. It's a cat. It's actually a white spotted cat. It's a white cat, a white spotted cat. The cat's name...
Mr. Whiskers.
I knew you were going to say that.
Mr. Whiskerson.
Mr. Whiskerson the third. Snuggle fluffy toes. No, the cat's name was Satan.
Nice. Subtle. Good. And understated.
Always a good start. Good, always a good start to pet ownership. Now, Elizabeth said the cat was indeed otherworldly. Ever since she received this white spotted cat named Satan, the cat could apparently speak to her in a strange, hollow voice. It would feed on milk and drops of blood.
Nice, tasty.
That's what sustained it. The cat would whisper instruction to Elizabeth all through her life, guided her through, possibly not on the best path advisable. Because cats, bastards.
What do you expect
bastards.
By a cat called Satan? It's not going to lead you right, is it?
No, cats are always like, go to the kibble over here constantly. If it's called Satan, you're not quids in here.
No.
But under the cat's influence, Elizabeth was said to have stolen livestock from her neighbours. She had reportedly harmed many men. In some accounts, it's that she'd killed many men. This is glossed over completely. There's a reference to a...
Killed many men. You stole my cows!
What the hell are you doing, woman? The cat. A rich man named Andrew Biles had apparently died mysteriously after leaving Elizabeth pregnant. And it was the cat who instructed Elizabeth on which herbs to put in her tea to terminate the pregnancy.
Nice. Clever cat.
Cat. I'm imagining the cat filing its nails. Yeah. The whole way through.
Absolutely. It's got a big swivelly chair.
Indeed. And it's stroking a human. Yeah. Elizabeth claimed to have willed the cat on to more terrible deeds herself. She willed the cat to commit acts on her behalf, but also she said she was influenced by the cat, including one account when she apparently got sick and tired of her new husband and even her new baby. She wanted the cat to do away with them. Now, at this point, the court is going, this is nice. Anything you want to say about Agnes, the woman we got in here on the murder witchy trials, you know, you don't have to keep saying shit about your cat. Fine. She goes, oh, yes, Agnes. Okay, fine. Now, Agnes said she eventually gave the cat, which is about 15 years old now, to Agnes. And possibly my favourite bit of the story is that she swapped the cat for a cake.
I think that's fair.
Hmm.
Why wasn't cake the secret ingredient?
Well, she said she gave
the cat... Where's the cake butler when you need them?
The cake butler would be furious. Did she get a cake for the cat instead of money? Or did Agnes make her a cake... And then she paid for it in cats.
But I feel it's a question for the philosophers, maybe.
I would love that. I would be with the latter. Yeah, I made you this cake. Okay, I haven't got any money. Have a cat. Cats for everyone. Just throwing tabbies at you. I made you a tiramisu. 4 kittens. I think more people should pay for stuff in cats.
In cat bartering.
So Agnes was also apparently schooled in the ways of witchcraft thanks to Grandmother Eve. And Elizabeth told Agnes when she gave her the cat, called Satan, that she must give him of her blood and milk Don't know if it's meant to be her milk or the blonde or just, you know, feed it blood and milk and it'll be fine.
Blood and milk will be fine.
It's always good news when you get a cat and like, okay, feed it blood and milk. Yeah. And it's had a past, I take it. Agnes now has the cat of Satan, or Satan the cat, and thinks, let's test out this cat. Agnes confesses that she set the cat on one of her pigs to see what he could do.
Okay.
And he indeed kills a pig.
That's pretty impressive for a cat.
It is. Agnes now thinks this is great. She's got a killer cat.
I've got a mad psycho cat.
Psycho cat at her command. Anytime she has a squabble with the neighbours, a dispute with a friend, she's just going to merrily set the cat onto their livestock and the cat does his job. Apparently kills geese.
Yeah.
And cows.
I mean, that's impressive.
What size is this cat?
This is in fact a lion.
Is it? Yeah, is it a panther?
Wandering around Essex.
Or a man in a cat suit. Meow.
Yeah.
Well, it couldn't be that huge because apparently the cat sleeps in a pot lined with wool. This is just a detail they put in there.
Keep it toasty warm.
It's just snuggly warm. Snuggly, I like that. Cat. It's like back to snuggly, snuggly cat. Apparently Agnes needed use of the wool though, so the cat was sleeping in there. So she turned the cat into a toad so she could get access to the wool, which is reasonable.
Yeah. You could just say, cat, get out.
Look, if you were a cat owner, Nick, you would know you don't move a sleeping cat.
I'm sorry, this is the cat that she can command to go and eviscerate cows, but she can't get it out of bed.
No, if your cat curls up somewhere and is all cute and snuggly, you don't move the cat. If the cat sleeps on your head, you will move out of the bed and sleep on the floor.
Yeah, but you,
because
yes,
the little kitty is sleeping there. Yeah, also, that cat can kill people. I'm not going to wake it up.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, so little catty, how cute he is. Lovely, lovely cat. I'm going to turn you into a toad.
Easier to manage.
Right.
Than the killer cat.
Okay, not just... I'm going to wait until the cat wakes up.
You've never owned a cat, Nick. You don't understand it.
Once they're asleep, cats never wake up.
Have you ever seen a cat? They sleep for 18 goddamn hours.
So she couldn't wait for wool for 18 hours.
Clearly she needed the wool.
Apparently desperate for
this
wool.
This is the hole that you are picking in this story.
I think I may be fixating on something unnecessarily.
No, go with it. We need to pick holes in this plot. Yes, she turned it into a toad. Classic familiar of the witch, the toad.
This is true.
Toad. Yeah. It gets so much worse, Nick. It gets so much worse.
Well, did the toad sleep on something that also that she wanted?
And then she turned it into a tiny fly. Also, people also argued at this point, going, Agnes didn't turn the cat into a toad. The cat turned itself into a toad, because that's more plausible.
Well, if the cat is a sort of demon of Satan, the cat can do what it fucking likes.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but it was snuggly. Yeah, why would it turn herself into a toad? Yeah, no, she did that. So Agnes said that she may have set the cat on other animals, but she never used her witchcraft or the cat's witchcraft to harm people or kill anyone. She insisted that she didn't do that. Whatever she said about taking revenge on neighbours and killing cows with a cat, the rest is not true, but it's not looking good for her.
That's actually quite... I'm going to... Again, interesting point. It's quite clever. This is 1566. 1563, the law changed. Nick's random history facts. Witchcraft Act of 1542. Henry VIII.
This is just in Nick's head.
Henry VIII going, anyone, anything to do with witches, cut their heads off.
Yes.
Kill them.
Yes.
Death.
Yeah.
Elizabeth I comes along, 1563. Different Witchcraft Act, which says, only going to kill them if they've caused harm to someone.
Ah.
If they've just sort of like messed up their hair, moved some books around or something like that, then...
Knock the milk over,
that sort of stuff. Maybe killed a cow. Yeah, you'll get punished, but not in a sort of especially witchcrafty way.
Ah.
It's only if you've specifically injured or killed a person through witchcraft, then you've had it. And that came in 1563.
Well, there we go. This case is all about... Can we convict someone of murder based on witchcraft? But there are a million stories bouncing around of, oh, I did this. Oh, she did this. Oh, I harmed people. Oh, I didn't do that. And the evidence in this pamphlet is tenuous at best. But yes, this has a bearing on the case. Next up in the trial is Joan Waterhouse, Agnes's daughter. Now, Joan is aware of the cat living in the pot in her house, who is the, you know, incarnation of Satan, killing animals willy-nilly, turning into toads. It's absolutely fine. One day, Joan is having a bad day. She has been shunned by a neighbour child. Now, Joan is about 18 at this time. She meets a neighbour child, Agnes Brown, and apparently the child refused to give her a piece of bread and cheese.
Bitch.
Joan is completely annoyed, and she thinks, I know, I'll go ask that cat toad for help.
Yep.
First reaction. She testifies that the toad told her, again a good sign, that he would help her if she offered up her soul to Satan.
I mean, classic bargain.
So whatever happens, a few days later, we hear the testimony of Agnes Brown, the 12-year-old girl. She is playing in the yard when she is confronted by a grim spectre, a huge black dog with horns and the face of an ape and a silver chain and a whistle around its neck. The dog approaches the little girl and spoke and asked for some butter. That's not a good day if that's happening.
Yeah.
If a dog's asking you for butter, it's...
This is the face of an ape.
With the face of an ape, yes.
I'm also thinking, she's... What, this is 1560, she's 12 in Essex. Where the fuck has she seen an ape?
Never seen an ape. Where?
Not that many zoos going around the place at this point.
Really? No.
Monkey's not native to England, really.
I mean, the testimony of a 12-year-old child, yes, is astonishingly weird and no one questions it. No, so Agnes goes no to the dog asking for butter. Dog goes fine, somehow produces a key to their milk house and goes and steals the butter himself. Yep. This is all read out in court.
Absolutely.
The dog returns then, later, with a knife and claims it would thrust the knife into the heart of the child and make her die, in her own words. Mm. And most damning of all, when Agnes Brown asked the dog who its dam was, he waggled his head towards Agnes Waterhouse's
fuck's
home.
Sake. For fuck's sake, evil dog, come on.
It's like, Now, the testimony of young Agnes Brown is pretty damning to the court. No one gives a hoot that she's 12 years old and can make up any old shit.
No, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, a part of this, all these sort of witch trials and stuff like that, they were notorious for the flimsiest of evidence. Mm. Evidence of children sort of 4 or 5 years old would give evidence in court, and then what they say was absolutely that's true. Sometimes you read about them actually taking the evidence of spirits. So a spirit has spoken to someone who said this person killed me, and that person who had this vision or something would relay that to court, and that would be given as evidence and used as legitimate proof that someone had done something untoward. So the burden of proof is pretty low. Yes. It's pretty low in these cases.
Suspend your disbelief, because while people may be going, this is all bollocks, it was read out in court.
Oh,
this
sure.
was recorded absolutely as fact.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
The women are apparently admitting to all manner of witchiness and devilry, but they're not admitting to harming a human being. But Agnes is saying, no, she's threatened, she's trying to do this, and the little child, Agnes Brown, this is. And other people are throwing in, oh, she killed this man, she killed that man. Now, are the women simply trying to blame a cat for their own misdeeds? Have they been persuaded to offer up their testimonies by some other means? Well, we don't know. What ends up is that Joan Waterhouse, the daughter of Agnes Waterhouse, is cleared of all charges. Elizabeth Francis gets off with a light sentence. She would actually stand trial again 13 years later for witchcraft and be hanged.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she got away from it for 13 years. But it's Agnes who is sentenced to death. Before she goes to the gallows, she reportedly confesses to having sent her cat Satan to try and kill a neighbour. It's a new name, this one as well. A tailor named Wardle. But apparently she wasn't able to harm him because his faith was too strong. It all gets convoluted about this person she sent to kill the cat, and then this isn't mentioned again. The one thing that apparently she does confess to is that she assisted the death of her husband. Now, some people say, was it the cat who did it? Did she slip him some poison? Or is it the fact that their marriage was not very happy? She had said that they had lived somewhat unquietly, which is a wonderful name for a bickering marriage. Somewhat unquietly. But some think maybe that there was a great deal of guilt that she had because she maybe let her husband die and didn't feel remorse about it because it was an unhappy marriage. Or did she help him along? Or did Satan the cat kill him? Either way, Agnes was hanged on the 25th of July, 1566, the first woman in England to be executed for witchcraft.
Oh, that's very good.
So that is the mad, mad story of Agnes Waterhouse. As we've established, witch trials, dig crazy. And this is an early one.
That is a very early one, absolutely. It's one of the first.
Yeah, we kind of think about witch trials, and depending where you're from, the witch trials date back to, I think the first one recorded in Europe is in the 1400s in Lavern. It's kind of on the border of Switzerland and Germany. The first actual trial.
Absolutely, because you've got the Inquisition, really, that sort of kicks off in the 13th century. Mainly then they're sort of focused on sort of heretics and generally anti-Christian people.
Yes.
But so by sort of the 1400s, mid-1400s, they are focusing more on the witchy heretics and things. I think it's 1480. You get the delightful book, the Malleus Maleficarum.
Yay.
That's written by two German Dominican monks. The Witch's Hammer, a delightful book, which is all about identifying witches and the best way of dealing with them with a variety of pointy instruments. That comes from Germany. And it has to be said that the witch trials in mainland Europe were 100 times worse than we had them in England. Scotland was not good.
No.
They had their pretty unpleasant pieces, but in England we fared pretty well on the witch trials. Not as well as Ireland, who did even better about not hanging and burning people.
Well, it's strange that we think about the Pendle witches and we think about the witch trials in England because we think, oh, how horrific. In America, obviously, there's the famous Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
In Scotland and in Europe, these are tens of thousands of people verging on, actually, when you add them up,
absolutely.
It's hundreds of
thousands and thousands of thousands of people. And also, I mean, in Europe and in Scotland as well, they did prefer the burning.
Oh, they did.
Whereas in England, preferred hanging. You wouldn't get burned unless it was for a treason or something like that. Something against the crown, then they would set you on fire. But for witches, it's a good old hanging would suffice.
So is there a particular reason why there was this switch over to witch trials, to persecuting people in court, as opposed to the sort of superstition that went before it?
Well, I think a lot of it came from when in England, when sort of like Henry VIII split away from the Catholic Church. So that, I think, was a big part of it. Whereas in Europe, the Pope reigned supreme, and in Scotland as well, for the Catholic faith. So that was all fire and brimstone, death and burning over there. But in England, where it was Protestantism, it was somewhat less superstitious. A little bit less. A bit more practical. a bit more less fire and brimstone.
More efficient.
More efficient, more official, more sort of, slightly terrifying in its own way.
Because some of the earliest stories that we hear about trials involving werewolves, trials involving witches, trials involving vampires, and even those stories have come from Europe, where you've still got deeply Catholic countries who are absolutely adhering to the Bible and saying, no, anyone who is different, we will persecute and we will cast them out in a very succinct way. In England,
well, there was that separation between church and state. In England, which you didn't necessarily have in some of the in European countries. And actually, the Witchcraft Act, the one that Henry VIII brought in and the one that Elizabeth I sort of modified, there are actually clauses in there barring the clergy from getting involved. So it was a purely state matter. There was nothing religious about it. It was in court. Those were the rules. A priest couldn't come along and claim religious preferences or anything like that on those cases.
But the heyday of witch hunts and the heyday of what we would see of witch hunts, if heyday is the right word, comes after Agnes Waterhouse's case.
Well, absolutely. That was one of the initial, I think that was one of the very first ones that came about. And they sort of grew from there throughout the sort of 17th century and then sort of died off in sort of the mid-1700s, towards the end of the 1700s, they sort of died a death. And one of the most famous ones that we know is Matthew Hopkins. I'm sure people are familiar with his name. Again, based around Essex, born in Suffolk, plied his trade around Essex.
So known as the Witch
Finder. The Witch Finder General. Indeed.
Played by the wonderful Vincent Price in the Hammer Horror films. Very disturbing film. You're going to tell us a little story.
So I can tell you a little bit about Matthew Hopkins. People may have gathered over the couple of years we've been doing this, sort of this sort of area is a fascination of mine. So the early 17th century, so the early 1600s, just after the time that Chenet was talking about, the paranoia about witches is ever increasing. You've got King James, who comes along after Elizabeth. You've got King James, who is absolutely obsessed with witchcraft. He was King James the VI of Scotland first, Catholic country, love a burning of a person, and while he was there, he is heavily involved in various witch trials, personally involved in various witch trials. There was one occasion where he's going to meet a proposed new bride in Denmark, and a massive storm erupts and all his ships are scattered and half of them sunk and he almost dies. He turns out that it's a witch's plot to stop him marrying this particular person. So from then on, he sort of is convinced the witches are out to get him.
I mean, they are.
They are entirely out to get him. And then there's a trial of about 300 witches in Scotland, which heavily involved in, of which a great many of them are burned for sort of treason against the king. For bad weather. So he develops his entire fascination and paranoia about witchcraft. He actually writes a book called Demonology.
Yes, he does.
Which is published in 1597, which is actually, I've got a copy of it.
You have a copy of a lot of weird
shit. I have a copy
shit.
Of a lot of weird
books.
I go
and look at Nick's bookcase every now and then. I go, interesting.
There's a lot of weird shit in there.
Interesting. I'm like, okay, why are they all arranged in a pentangle? Okay.
Some people think it's just a bit of, the king wrote this, so obviously they published it. But it was considered a serious sort of academic study on sort of witches, their aims, their methods, how to find them. And it was a book that was used quite a lot. But when he became James the First of England, he brought all this sort of paranoia and everything with him into England. So this sort of anti-witch sentiment is only ramped up hugely by the time he arrives. Then a few years later, you start in 1642, you start with the English Civil War kicks off, where you've got the Royalists against the Parliamentarians, really. And a lot of the Parliamentarians are hugely puritanical, strict Protestant sort of upbringing, no time for anything else. But during the Civil War time, you get villages and towns who are completely devastated by this. You have huge economic depression, starvation. There's this huge religious turmoil as well. Any sort of law and order sort of falls apart. You're describing the assizes that they used to go around. They stopped going around. So little towns and villages became their own sort of fiefdoms, really. And it was left to the people who lived there to manage their own affairs, really. They weren't getting any guidance from higher up the chain. So they were left to interpret sort of laws and dispense justice as they saw fit. And it's into this sort of vacuum of power that someone like Matthew Hopkins wanders in and sort of takes control. He's born in 1620, well, around 1620, in a little village in Suffolk.
So this is the time of the Mayflower's maiden voyage as well to America. So you can understand the puritanical kind of depression.
Absolutely, that sort of zeal and things.
Let's go to the New World. Let's escape England. It's horrible here.
But people in England are still trying to make that sort of world here. People stayed and were still trying to replicate that. Some people say, we ain't got enough time for this. Let's go to America.
America's lovely.
It's lovely over there, absolutely. So, I mean, not much is known about his childhood.
Yay! You've never said that.
I know. but it's true. But his first sort of definite appearance comes in 1644. In the intervening years, he has moved to Essex, to the town of Manningtree. And he has made the acquaintance of a chap called John Sterne. Now, in 1644, something happens to John Sterne, which we don't know what it was, but it leads him to accuse a number of women in the town of trying to kill him, but trying to kill him through sorcery.
Does he turn into a frog?
I don't think he was turned into a frog.
Did the big black cat come after him?
Potentially Satan came after him, or there was a dog shaped like a monkey. We don't know what it was.
We don't know what happened to Satan in that trial.
No, there he was in Manningtree, and he was annoying the hell out of John Sterne. So we say we don't know what this trigger was, but Sterne asks his dear friend, Matthew Hopkins, to help him out. And Hopkins, he's quite enthusiastic in his agreement. He has come from this incredibly puritanical family. His father, his uncle, one of his brothers are all priests or vicars. So this sort of zeal has been drummed into him since birth, really. So he has got that vibe about him. He is
he's got a vibe. Matthew Hopkins has a vibe.
He's sort of disapproving of everything and anyone he's ever met, really. I can't imagine he's much fun at parties, really.
No.
And I mean, until this point, traditionally, sort of one of the first stages of investigating witchcraft is if someone said, "Oh, that person's a witch," they wouldn't go straight to the pointy things. There would be some steps in between. And one of the first ones would be to lock them up and set watchers to observe them.
Hmm.
Just like through windows, just have a look, see what they're doing for a few days.
Ew.
Well, the idea being that if these women, predominantly women, obviously, are locked up, if they were to conjure any spirits, if a familiar was to arrive and chat to them, if they started zooming around on a broom or something like that.
They've heard about the grease shafts. Exactly. Everyone wants to look at that.
So these watchers would see this going on and then be able to report in court, say, "Oh yes, I saw them talking to a spirit," or "Satan came in," or "they were zooming around the rafters like anything." Mm-hmm. Here's the evidence. Now, this is taking a bit too long for Matthew Hopkins' liking, really. It's taking a bit too much time. So he convinces these watchers that he should get in there and see if we can move things along a bit. You know, speed up the process slightly. Torture is technically illegal still at this point, apart from sort of capital crown-based crimes. Treason against the Queen, yeah, we'll stretch you and chop your bits off. But general day-to-day stuff, not allowed to torture
day-to-day,
people, really.
Day-to-day, not so much.
It's not much allowed.
You didn't deliver the milk on time. I will put you in the Iron Maiden, goddammit!
Well, it makes a change makes a difference from Europe, where Iron Maiden, thumbscrews, all that sort of thing, bring it on!
Absolutely.
Go for it. Over here, it's slightly more restrained.
I only said Jehovah.
But what there is over here, I mean, it's an incredibly fine line. And you have somewhat more of a psychological thing going on. Sleep deprivation.
Ooh.
Where people are forced to stay awake for days upon days upon days. Whoa. In the end. People who are forced to run on the spot for hours and hours and hours until they pretty much collapse from exhaustion. People who are forced to walk circles around a room again for days upon days until they just... till they just collapse.
So just breaking the body.
Just breaking,
kind of,
breaking people down.
Not with the hammers, but just with...
Exactly.
Yeah, just physical and psychological,
so it's
kind
all
of
like
exhaustion.
It's straight out of us like a CIA handbook now, really.
God, yeah. Oh, my
so
God,
it's,
yeah.
It's frighteningly,
stress positions and...
Exactly. It's all that sort of stuff. So it's frighteningly modern in its approach.
Oh, I don't like
to, we're not going to get the hammers out, but instead... Yeah, stress positions, sleep deprivation, banging saucepans at people for fucking hours and stuff like that.
God.
It's all that sort of stuff.
As an insomniac, I feel it.
I mean, there were the few sort of classic things. They obviously, the people did get searched for blemishes, warts, extra nipples and things. You know, extra nipples that you would use to suckle your familiar.
I like the way you said, "Are you hiding an extra
nipple? I'm hiding an extra nipple there. Where is it?
There it is, there it is, there it is."
Oh, I found it. So all these sort of, extra warts and these physical peculiarities, devil's marks. And of course, I mean, at the end of all this, days upon days of this sort of torture, people will say anything you want. You don't have to get the spiky things out. People will tell you what you want to hear. Of course, many, many women confess to doing whatever they want them to confess to, consorting with the devils, signing their souls away. There's one woman, I mean, your familiar called Satan, the one woman confesses to have a demon buddy familiar called Bubbles.
Whoa. bunny.
A demon bunny.
A demon bunny.
A demon
called
bunny
Bubbles.
Rabbit called Bubbles.
No, she doesn't.
She does.
No, she doesn't. What? That's amazing. What?
Which is great.
That is a fuck you to whoever is torturing you. That is lying there going, I have a bunny and it's called Bubbles.
But this is also then Matthew Hopkins going, right, she's got a bunny called Bubbles. This is now fact. I've got this written down. She has confessed to having a demon bunny called Bubbles.
Great.
I can take this to court and use it as evidence against her as a witch. Even if it was said sarcastically or stupidly, doesn't matter.
I guess if you are that exhausted, you know, you'd wish for death to make the torture end. You know, torture is torture for a reason. You go, anything to make this stop. And if I have to die, it's fine. I mean, go out on a high with bunny, Bubbles the bunny.
Bubbles the demon bunny.
The demon bubble. Demon bunny. It is the rabbit.
It is the rabbit.
Look at it, bones.
That's exactly what it is. So, I mean, apart from the demon bunny, these women also, they give names of other women in the town. They then are taken in for questioning and such like.
And name more woodland animals.
Name more. Eventually, about 36 women have confessed to various forms of witchcraft and such like. Now, Hopkins, he's now considered he's done his job. He's got these confessions. So he takes these to the Earl of Warwick, who is sort of oversees the supposed justice in this area. And he takes these confessions that he's got from these women. And those women are sent to trial based on these confessions. And 19 of them are hung. Two of them die while waiting in prison.
I've heard of that a few times. Of actually a lot of witches were just so battered. And,
absolutely.
Witches in inverted commas, excuse
they
me.
Don't survive the waiting in prison. Because the conditions are also dreadful. Disease, starvation and things. So they die waiting for a trial. But 19 of them have ended up being hanged. But so Hopkins, he doesn't stick around to see any of this. He's done his job. He's got the confession. And now he's off to the next village. There are other witches to sort of sniff out. After his first sort of success, he is incredibly, well, he's very much overjoyed by his initial success. So he gives himself the title, the famous title of Witchfinder General.
I mean, it's a pretty good title for an absolute bastard.
It's a good title to have.
I mean, it's one of those where you kind of sit there and just go like, oh, God, it's a good title. God, I wish it wasn't such a good title. Damn you!
Yeah.
It's like a Bond villain or something.
It is.
You go, oh, that's really cool.
Absolutely.
Oh, Witchfinder General. Clippy-clopping around on his horse looking for fucking Bubbles the Bunny.
He manages to convince people that he has authority from Parliament to seek out witch. He doesn't have any of it.
No, he doesn't
have any of this sort of authority. But he's obviously so charismatic and he is able to speak with such conviction that people are convinced that he has this authority.
He is Vincent Price.
He's got this title. He's probably got a few medals. He's got a fancy hat. No one's going to question him.
Big hat.
The next month, there is the largest witch trial in English history. It's held in Bury St Edmunds in Suffolk, where 18 people, two women and two men, are hanged on evidence supplied by Hopkins. Now, there were over 100 put on trial. So from over 100 put on trial, 18 are hanged. About 10 die, again, die in prison. That is the biggest trial, witch trial there has ever been in England.
So far.
I'm really hoping we're not going to have any coming up. I do hope. But Hopkins and Stern, his sort of like brother-in-arms, really, they begin to travel around eastern England. So it's Essex, Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridgeshire, Bedfordshire, that sort of area, going from village to village to village. They're followed by pretty much a selection of groupies now. Women who follow them around. They're known as prickers.
I've heard of this, yes.
These women who follow. Because they are appointed to sort of search out on the accused, the devil's marks and things, and sort of prick them with supposed needles. And if they don't bleed, then obviously that's a terrible, terrible sign of the devil. That is one more piece of evidence against them.
When they pricked them, they were pricking them to actually give them the sign of the devil or something, so the devil's bitten them.
There's a few reports, actually, that they use prickers with retractable needles. Like stage knives, that actually the needles used, so they could say, oh, look, we're stabbing this person and nothing's happened to them, so there's no blood, therefore they are in league with Satan because they've got extra tough skin.
Oh, God.
And things. And I think you may be absolutely right that other occasions where they did prick them, oh, it's the mark of the devil, there's a blemish there, sort of thing. That's where the familiar has bitten or something like that. So
it's all
evidence against them. I mean, the methods they use sort of develop as they travel around. I mean, one of the most infamous is the famous ducking in a stream.
Now, in Canterbury, we have a ducking stool.
There is a ducking stool in Canterbury, absolutely.
Has been preserved and restored, and you can see it in Canterbury. Yes, I think that's a reproduction. It's not an original one. Well, the original one was kept for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can still see it. It looks amazing. It's next to some Tudor buildings.
Very terrifying.
Ducking stool was generally used for wives who would talk too much. Scolds who were nagging their husbands too much, and they would just be dipped into the river for punishment.
Yeah.
So the one in Canterbury was not used to duck witches.
Wasn't used for witches. I don't think there weren't a huge amount of witches this far, sort of southeast. It was a bit more to the north of where we are now.
If you see a ducking stool, it wasn't necessarily witches.
I mean,
witches went into the water
lot. Witches went into the water a lot. And it tended to be, rather than like a stool or anything like that could be easily retrieved, it was tie someone up and tie them to a rope and chuck them in, really. There was no sort of desperately complicated apparatus or anything like that.
Give them a rock to hold.
So the theory being that if they drowned, if they sank to the bottom and drowned, then they were obviously innocent. They may be dead, but God has them in heaven now, so it's fine. Good Christian water he gave, they're absolutely fine. But if they were to float, if they came back up again, then no. Obvious proof of devilry afoot.
Evil lungs.
Evilness going on there. So they will be hoisted out of the river and then probably hung. Then sent for trial and hung. Now, I mean, there are two theories about why someone might float.
Science?
No, but we're talking sort of 1600s theories here.
Okay.
So science not got a great deal to do with it.
Hit me with it.
So first of all, if the witch came up, then obviously they are using their magic powers. To make them come up so they can breathe. Therefore, witch. Or a witch has obviously made a pact with the devil. Their soul is unclean, and therefore the water, which has been used to baptize them originally, rejects them.
Water shall refuse them.
Exactly. The water rejects them and does not let them sink, so the water pushes them out. And therefore they float. Either way, it's not going to be a good end, really.
It's not a good one. No. that's just a bad day.
Now, Hopkins spends the entire of 1646 conducting his sort of witch hunts. And he generally demands a relatively healthy stipend in return for his services. It's reported that Ipswich, a town in Suffolk, has to raise taxes to pay for his services
when he arrives there. In cats and cake.
I don't believe so. I believe they pay him in cash.
God, he should have just gotten under the cats.
Yeah. Depending on where he went, I mean, he didn't have like a set list of prices. If he went to a big town, he would obviously charge more than went to a small village.
Oh, fair enough.
But it would be somewhere between sort of £2 for a small little village up to sort of 20, £25 for a big town.
Bloody hell.
Now, this is when a labourer is earning perhaps 3 or 4 pence a day.
Yeah.
And you're demanding £4 or £5 or £20. It's a huge sum of money. But people will pay it because people are terrified. People are paranoid about what's going on. People don't like their neighbours. people want that person's field. So people will pay it. Now, there are various different sources that claim that around between 200 and 300 people are executed as a result of Hopkins and Stern's sort of activities. But sort of reign of terror is actually relatively short.
Yeah.
They're only active for around about 18 months, which is surprising considering how much notoriety they have. 400 years later, we're still talking about them.
Good name.
Good name, Witchfinder General, absolutely.
That's it.
but they do stop eventually when people sort of begin to question their motives. Mm. These sort of fees they're charging. Mm. They're going, well, if you're really doing this for the good of humanity and for your God, why are you charging such ungodly amounts? And there are also people question, well, where is your expertise? Where is your authority coming? And people going, well, I quite like the name. General sounds good. So people start to question what actual authority these two have. And when eventually news of his sort of methods reaches London, reaches Parliament. Say again, torture is meant to be illegal at this point. Whereas before it had been a bit, oh, let them get on with it. Now the Civil War is sort of coming to a bit of a stabilisation. The Royalists are definitely on the way out. Parliamentarians have pretty much won. It's a bit like, well, we can't really be seen to be condoning this type of thing. And there's actually a group of gentlemen who write a pamphlet against him, and they say that Hopkins has used unlawful courses of torture to make them say anything for ease and quiet. Abominable, inhumane and unmerciful trial of those poor creatures by trying them and heaving them into water, a trial not allowable by law or conscience.
Oh.
So there's quite this backlash against him and his methods. Now, Hopkins realises that his time sort of in the spotlight is well and truly over. Mm. So he's been active for about 18 months, but he's managed to kill a few hundred people, so that's good going, really. So hurrah for you. He returns to Manningtree in Essex, where he retires, and he writes his book. Mm. He writes his book, A Discovery of Witches.
Yay.
Is the name of his book. In which
It's
not those books. It's the original book.
The original books which they repurposed.
The original A Discovery of Witches. And which he tries to rebuff all his detractors. People who are writing against him, he tries to rail against them. Mm. And he really fights his corner for sort of ridding the world of witches, really. Which I think he actually believes is a noble pursuit. In a sort of slightly twisted, or very twisted way. He believes he's doing the right thing. This book is published, and eventually it does, as we touched on earlier, it makes its way over to America, where it is pretty much used as a how-to guide during the New England witch trials, sort of later in that 17th century. Hopkins dies a year after his retirement. He's only mid-20s by this point, but he has achieved a hell of a lot. He dies around sort of, he's 27, 28, I think, when he dies. Probably tuberculosis, people think. But there's a fantastic legend that he actually goes into, he's retired, and he walks into a village one day and someone accuses him of being a witch. And he is ducked and he floats and he is found guilty and he is hanged as a witch.
Oh, right. Okay.
I mean, it would be great if that was true, but rather very fitting end. But unfortunately, I think it probably was tuberculosis. Exciting. So he does. So yeah, I mean, Matthew, he's a fascinating character. It was a very special set of circumstances that allowed someone like him to flourish, really. The whole conjunction of random shit going on.
It's important to remember that, because we think of Matthew Hopkins and because of Hammer Horror, and we think of the Witchfinder General and think this was just the way it was, and he was stopped.
He was stopped, absolutely.
But
not before doing a huge amount of damage.
Indeed. So yes, what began with Agnes in England wouldn't end for centuries afterwards. But truly, the witch trials in England, the witch trials in Europe, the witch trials in America, around the world, would result in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people, maybe even into the millions, most of which were women. These were murders. The women and the men who were burned, hanged, beaten to death and forced to endure tortures beyond the realm of imagination were the victims of bloodthirsty lunacy or plain old-fashioned fear-mongering, and maybe in some cases a genuinely believed faith. For the handful of men who were smugly happy to see a woman tortured to death as penance for speaking out of turn, there were scores or even hundreds of people who stood by and nodded along out of fear of what would happen to them. So strong is one person's belief, and so powerful is another person's fear, terrible things can happen. And they are still happening today. In India, for example, around 2,500 people were hunted, tortured and killed on suspicion of being a witch between 2000 and 2016. And the killing of witches continues today in countries such as Saudi Arabia, Democratic Republic of Congo, South Africa, Tanzania and many other locations. Witch hunts are seldom about magic, but they are always about murder. So spare a thought for the innocent witches this Halloween. And also keep an eye on your cats.
And your monkeys that look like dogs.
Well, there is our little tale of witches for Halloween. Mm. Oh, thank you for the history, Nick.
A lot of history there.
We got a lot today. Big bonus episode of witches and witch hunters and witch finders and witch cats and witch dogs and everybody in between. So what do you think, people? Do you have some witchy stories you'd like to share? We're obviously giving you a little excerpt of English witch hunting and witchcraft. There are more tales from Europe. There are lots more tales from America, and maybe we'll cover them in the future. But tell us what you think of the episode. Jump on the comments on any of the social media channels that you follow and tell us your thoughts, your theories, or just what the hell you're doing for Halloween.
Indeed. And if you're like me, then give the Black Cat a go. If you're like Sinead, then don't.
Maybe try one of the other variations of the black cat.
Exactly. There are many variations that people have put on Instagram and Facebook. So try those out. The recipe will be out on Friday. Well, have a look. See what you think. Otherwise, there are many other fantastically Halloweeny cocktails out there.
But share your cocktails from Halloween weekend and share your pictures of whatever you're doing for Halloween, wherever you are in the world, because we love to see them. Well, Sinead loves to see them. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.